Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field.
We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
Welcome back. Performance Baseball Podcast, Episode 4. Here we go.
Yep, here we go.
We're talking in-game strategy today. But before we get into all that, Josh, how you doing? How's life treating you?
Yeah, doing well. Life's good. Getting over a cold snap here. I mean, man,
it's been so cold this week.
It has been so cold. Negative wind chills. It's been icy. I think it's fine. Hopefully we'll finally thaw out this week.
Yeah.
This weekend. But man, it has been cold. But I mean, we're doing well.
You got little ones. Do they like playing in the snow, or is that not quite in their repertoire yet?
Yes, my son, he's 3. He loves playing in the snow. But, I mean, let's just be real. Like, with a toddler, when it gets so cold, I mean, it's probably best not have a toddler out in the running around the snow. Right. But, yeah, he loves the snow. Gosh, and he's already picked up the idea of snowball fights. Last time
That's
it snowed.
Awesome.
He was trying to just get snow down my shirt and my shoes. He was trying to just cover me in snow, which was so much fun, but also one of those things where it's like, dude, get away. Hold on.
Yeah, my boys, they have decided that when there's snow on the ground, that's the best time to play football. They want to go outside and tackle each other and throw each other to the ground and, you know, that kind of thing. So
I mean, it gives you a soft landing, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So
anyway. Well, very nice. How's your week going?
Good. You know, we anytime it snows around here, we start thinking about what snowmen we could build.
Mm-hmm.
My father-in-law has done a bunch of snow sculptures in the past, and unfortunately the snow, there wasn't quite enough of it this time, and it was like kind of the wrong consistency to do it. But we always work with him and figure out like what movie character we're gonna do, or character from pop culture that we're gonna do. And we sculpt it, and we almost always end up on the news.
And it's not just a typical snowman, guys. Like, it is not just just a 3-ball snowman. I mean, you've done The Mandalorian.
Yep.
You've done Minions. Was that those last one?
What did you the last one we did, Bluey. We did Bluey.
That's
and Bingo.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We've done.
And they're life-size sculptures, man.
Yeah.
They're huge.
We did a 10-foot-tall Shrek.
With colors and everything.
Yeah, we spray paint it. My father-in-law Rex is the primo artist. We follow his commands. It's a lot of fun, and we have a good time with it. But
yeah, absolutely.
So if you're in the Oklahoma City area and you ever want to see a cool snow sculpture,
and you do it on like the corner of a main street, right?
Yeah, it's We've kind of set up shop out in front of his neighborhood there off of 150th and Western is about where it is. So,
I mean, it's a great spot, especially to attract the news. I mean, yeah, you always have the news out there, so you get the nice spotlight to get everyone to come see it out.
It's fun. My wife and her sisters have been doing it since they were itty bitty.
That's awesome.
And so it's just become a tradition anytime it snows.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's fun. Nice. All right. So let's talk in-game strategy. You want to start by talking about, before we even get to the game, and who's got what responsibilities, and what does a pregame warm-up look like, and what are your pregame speeches like, and what expectations are you trying to set before you even start the game?
Yeah, and going back to like our previous episodes, we've already covered, you know, like the leadership role as a coach. We've talked about practice planning and all that, but when it comes to the games, I mean, once you get to the game situation and game day, you should have a lot of those things already ironed out in your head. You should already have a flow of at least like the pecking order, you know, in terms of the coaching staff. What I like to do is like have a coaches meeting before the season, and we'll discuss like, and if you're with these coaches for a long term, you probably already know what everyone's strengths are, or what their primary, like what they're good at, should be. So once you get to that game day, I like assigning the coaches to watch a specific role. So for instance, like my duties, I handle all the pitchers and catchers. So I do pitch calling. I talk, I work the rotations. I am completely locked in on the pitchers and catchers. I'm rarely watching the defense. Like, yes, I'm going to scan obviously for hitters, you know, see what the tendency is, what the situation is. And then I have a guy that's shifting our infielders and shifting our outfielders.
Now, do you let your catchers call pitches or do you signal those in?
So at 13, I like starting to let them get more of the reins. So last season, I started at least the first couple of innings just to kind of get them working in the right direction, start seeing what, you know, how I view the hitters. And then from there, I'll start handing it off, whether it's, hey, you have this half of an inning or these two batters, or depending on the score, it's just like, hey, go run with it.
And, what do you like to do in terms of, your approach, with how you handle the different counts and things like that? So count, are you starting fastball and just trying to get one over the plate? Are you working backwards at all depending on the hitter, or like what are some of the things that you're doing there? When you're calling those pitches?
As far as like calling pitches early in the game, I'll just want to set the tone with fastballs. I mean, we just live, we want to set the tone as a pitcher.
So you don't work in off speed super early in the game yet?
Not typically. So I like thinking of pitching as if you're in like a poker game. So you never want to show all of your cards right away. So first inning, I'm going to try to just let my fastball run through all the batters until they could prove that they could hit the ball.
Yeah.
Once they prove that they could hit the ball, then we'll start throwing in the changeup or curve or whatever pitches our pitchers have at that moment. But really, we'll really dive in on just, hey, we're going to set the tone with just fastballs. We want to just try to pound the zone. And then once they show that they could swing it, or if we know kids' previous existing, you know, batting averages or anything like that, then we can start throwing to their weaknesses. So
now, do you communicate that, those ideas, to your pitchers and catchers before the game?
Most of the time, yeah. I try to set that precedence with them to, hey, we're just going to attack the zone and then, you know, work our off speed as the game progresses.
Yeah.
Because nothing crazier to a batter is to get in the box and see nothing but fastballs, go back to the dugout and be like, okay, he has all fastballs. You know, those batters are communicating with their other hitters. And they're like, okay, he's got only fastballs. And then suddenly the next inning, oh my gosh, he has a fastball curveball, and his curveball does this.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's fastball, curveball, changeup, slider. You're throwing the whole arsenal at them. And then it's like, oh my gosh, you're just constantly keeping those hitters guessing. So first at bat, I'm not a big proponent of just like throwing every pitch at them just because I don't want to show all the cards too early. So that's how I handle kind of the pitch calling from there. I don't technically like pay attention to like, I pay attention to counts. Obviously that's a big, pitches are dependent on counts, but I pitch to like the swings. So I more so read their swings and see what they're doing. If they have a bat that drags, or if they're casting their barrel, we're probably going to jam them inside over and over, you know, until they could speed it up.
Or if they're constantly late on that fastball, just keep
throwing. Just jam them in, right, or we'll try to get them to cap it or whatever it is. So I like reading swings and getting the next pitch location or the next pitch type based off that swing.
And you were a catcher, right?
So
that's your expertise.
And I do pay attention to like what batters, I think, you know, you definitely have to pay attention to what batters have done the previous at bats. But honestly, like every at bat, especially at the youth age, they're not professionals, so their swing may look great one at bat, and then the hitter's swing may look totally different the next at bat. So I like just paying attention to where they're at in the game and pitching to their weaknesses, if that makes sense.
So with that kind of early part of the game, are you calling locations as well and saying, hey, let's work down, then up, then in, then out, and just trying to locate fastball that way? Or are we just saying, hey, let's get this one over the plate, let's make this one off the plate, or something like that?
Yeah, so I do typically like three locations. So mainly I'll cut the play in half, and I'll do inner half, outer half. No locations unless, you know, it's really evident that, hey, we need to elevate this pitch or we need to bury this pitch down, which I'll communicate with hand gestures to my catcher, you know, when you're pitch calling.
But I don't know how you communicate this on a podcast, but what does that look like?
Yeah.
You just saying like,
you can just do hand gestures like, hey, I'm going to give you whatever pitch based on my hand. So I like working off my face. So whatever the call is, you know, if it's a changeup call and I want it to be buried, I'm just going to do changeup. I'm going to point down. You know, I'm just going to point down. Okay. I mean, is what it is. Like, if people pick that up and our pitcher executes the pitch, like, the batter's going to struggle with it no matter what.
Yeah.
So
you're not necessarily going, like, flashing numbers and you're looking for the third number and fourth, like, all of that. That's
yeah, pitch calling, it's literally, like, I'll just go, most of the time it's last touch on the face or first touch, or you know, I mix it up in case, you know, some other teams in our tournaments are paying attention. But typically first touch, last touch, third touch, whatever it is, but it's all through the face, like you know, brim of the hat or bill of the hat, nose, chin, ears, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then you can mix up. Somebody starts picking signs. You could do, hey, it's my right hand or my left hand. That's just what's worked for me. And then, you know, keep going from there.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. So early in the game, you might be working fastball location, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now we did kind of skip over, we got right into it real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, pre-game warm up and kind of preparing your guys for the game, what does that look like for you?
Oh my gosh, man. And those of you that are in tournaments, some facilities, some complexes are fantastic. There's a location down the road from us. Well, they have a couple batting cages that are provided for down in Moore. They'll have some batting cages provided for, you know, for teams to utilize pregame as first come, first serve. But there's a lot of complexes that they have nothing. It's just narrow concrete walkways with a little tiny cut in of grass, which sometimes complexes drive me crazy how they design them, because there's no spots for teams to warm up in.
Yeah.
So, and then once you get on the field, you know how it goes. You're under the clock. Your game starts in 5 minutes. Every tournament tends to run behind. So all the umpires are trying to speed it up and our guys that are not warmed up. How we run it, obviously, is going to be dependent
on the space,
on the complex, but we have a general sense of what our routine is. So we'll go through an active warm-up. We'll be working like 10-yard distances. So, you know, loosening up the legs, loosening up our arms, all that stuff, just stretches while we're moving. From there, we'll play light catch depending on how the complex is laid out. But most of the time, there's not space to play catch unless you're playing until about like 20 feet or so, just to get like the feel for your release points. A lot of the time we won't throw until we get on the field, but we'll follow typically what our practice warm-up is. We'll go through our stretches. We'll go through our throwing progressions where it's throwing knee down. We'll get some flips. We'll work our way back and have our shoulder throws. We'll work our way back even further, start walking into our throws, and then work into a quick long toss. And then we'll throw hard as we work our way back to our partners. But that's not always the case off the field. So I usually leave the throwing for when we get on the field for those 5 minutes or so that we have before the game. Pre-games, again, depends on the complex. Do you utilize like squish balls or anything like that for your hitters pre-game? Yeah, what do you use?
I've got those little weighted TCB balls. We'll use the
total control balls. Yeah.
I've got a crap ton of them.
So I know
we divide up into four stations usually.
Yeah.
Either me and the other coaches are throwing to them underhand from close range. Or the boys themselves can do that.
Depending on if you could trust them.
Yeah.
At what age?
Yeah. As they get older, I would like for them to be able to do that more. Yeah. At 10U, there's a couple of them that like kind of get it and can do it. Because you gotta put a little. You can't lob it in there. You gotta put a little bit.
You have to
of
at least put
it
on line somewhat.
Right, right. So anyway, we'll get our bats loose. And actually, sometimes I check and see, are we visitor? Are we home? And whatever we're going to be to start the first inning, that's what I'll end with.
Sure.
So like if we're going to be visitor and hitting first, then we'll save the hitting warm up for last.
For yeah, so you just rock and roll right into the game.
Right.
Which typically that's going to be Sundays in tournament sense.
Right. Or sometimes pool play, leagues. You don't really know.
But if you're in a league game and you're already established as the home team, then yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
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 But what you're alluding to with those like heavy balls is coaches, I recommend that you just have a couple different things depending on where you're playing. So weighted balls are great because you don't need tons of space to get their swings moving. Weighted balls are great because it trains their top hand to really drive through the ball.
Yeah.
It gets all their muscles firing, you know, because if you top it or if you hit the top of the ball or bottom of the ball's going nowhere.
Or if you lazy swing.
If like, you lazy swing, the ball's going to fall right at your feet. Yep. Yeah, or it's going to sting and vibrate. And yeah, and no one likes that.
The other thing that I've done in the past too, and I haven't done as much with my teams lately, but it is good every now and then, is to pull out the little skinny bat.
Yeah.
And the little tiny
mini golf ball.
Yeah. Like wiffle balls.
Yeah.
The only problem is, like you said, space.
They fly.
Those things can hit them a mile now.
Yeah. We've done the squish balls, like the rubber squishy balls that have holes in them. Those are great. Yep. I think they're called smush balls or something like that. But those also fly, but however, if it hits someone, like, it's not going to hurt anyone. So,
yeah.
But again, space is definitely a challenge on there, especially as you get older. Like our 13U guys, I mean, they could hit them, 90 feet or so. And
oh, yeah.
You don't always have 90 feet or so. Right. Yeah, those weighted balls are definitely great. Sometimes if space is actually really, really tight, I'll have my guys play a game of pepper, which is a fun one.
Yeah.
Cause then it just trains you just to get the barrel to the ball.
Especially between games. I like,
yeah, pepper is great. I mean, it's a great close proximity game that,
you know, what was wild though, is I had to teach my 10U guys last year how to play it. They had no idea.
Oh my gosh. What it was. It is a blast.
I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Come on, guys.
Oh my gosh. I love jumping in those games because, I mean, it is competitive too. Once you're on the defensive side, like, your hands have to be crazy fast to catch that ball.
Now, you know? Everybody plays pepper a little bit differently. So what's your version?
So how I work is everyone's in that line. You know, like the defenders are in that line. You have one hitter. And whoever catches the ball or whoever has the ball flips the ball, it has to be a strike. And the guy with the bat is just a check swing or a half swing. If it's hit in the air and the guy catches it, then the front of the line, whoever's in the front of the line, is up to bat.
Oh,
so I go to the front of the line.
I always do. If you catch it, you get up, to go hit.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like going into a single file line, so the front of the line is always the on deck guy. But here's the catch is if you get the ball, so let's say the hitter bounces the ball to you and you get it, you have a split second to flip the ball to your neighbors. And if they drop it, they go to the end of the line.
Okay. Wait. Say that again.
All right. So you flip the ball, you have the hitter, you flip the ball and the hitter, you know, gives that check swing, the half swing. And if it hits the ground and the fielder gets it, they're safe. Right. So no one's out, no one dropped it or anything like that. If you drop it, you go back to the line. You go to the back of the line. So you're last in line.
Yeah.
But if you do get that one hop to you, you grab the ball, you can quickly flip the ball to your neighbors. And if they drop it, they go to the back of the line.
So you can kind of pass
the, so you can start like passing up in the line. Yeah, the hot potato. Yeah, exactly. It's almost like a hot potato. So that allows you to get to the front of the line quicker to be the hitter. That's how I like playing.
So what, like a little like side hand?
It's kind of like a side toss. Like a, almost like a double play feed or, you know, whatever it is. Just field it and get to the guy.
Interesting. But okay, cool.
Yep, that's the way I like
that little wrinkle.
But yeah, I know there's so many different ways to play pepper, but that's how I like teaching. And you know, you have this a different way where you catch it, you're up. But it is a fun way to get them alive, get their hands moving, get the hitters attacking the ball.
Little competition,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
And whiffs, you're out. You know, so you're done hitting.
The other thing I've done too, between games, just to keep their bodies warm, is bring a soccer ball.
Oh yeah,
and just have them kick soccer ball around.
Yeah,
I think soccer is a really good sport for just overall athleticism and you know, development.
Yeah,
but yeah, so sometimes I'll do that too.
And you can see who on your team has two left feet.
You know,
can't kick the ball. Yes.
I don't want them wearing each other out with it, but yeah.
But it stays them plugged in. It keeps them warm. It keeps them from just sitting in the corner and just getting stiff.
Yeah.
Sitting on the concrete up against a light post.
Or, you know, sitting down and watching YouTube for
yep
an hour and a half or whatever.
And now they're drained, they're tired, yeah, they're ready for a nap. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So we talked a little bit about kind of early game strategy with how we want to call pitches, but like later in the games when you start to mix pitches, are you necessary? So you said you're more looking at how the kid is swinging the bat, but like if you're up 0-2, are you throwing something in the dirt? You're throwing like a changeup. You're throwing a slider or a curveball or something.
Yeah. Depending on the batter. Again, early in the game, we may try to just throw fast, like a fastball off the plate, or try to elevate, try to get a chase on it. But I'm not just going to throw a changeup in the dirt just for the heck of it because it's two strikes. So if if there's a batter that just whiff, you know, we're just probably just going to bust him in with a fastball or just get him to freeze on the outside fastball.
But if those two strikes are foul balls like right down the line,
absolutely.
Or something like
if
that,
he's hacking or he fouls something straight back, showing he's on time, then we'll bury a changeup or we'll go for that chase.
That's interesting. I now that you say that's what you do is you look more at the batter. I think there is a part of me that does that too, but I think I may even go into this next season with a little bit more intent on that front.
I do
have a tendency to want to throw a changeup earlier in the game. Now, and we can get into player rotation too, because my philosophy at 10U anyways is I follow the pitch smart, the MLB pitch smart guidelines pretty closely. And so on Saturdays, I'm typically throwing guys one inning and trying to cap them at about 20 pitches. And so if they can't make it through the inning in 20 pitches, then I'll pull them. Because I just want to make sure that I've got everybody available for Sunday.
Yeah.
But I've been toying with the idea of having Saturday starters and Sunday starters going into this season. So how do you manage that?
Yeah, I hate using the terminology because I think that there's so many people, especially younger parents, that just want their kids to be like, oh my gosh, he's a bracket pitcher. Right. Like, hear the term, like, especially in the groups, like, oh, my son's a strong righty. He's a bracket pitcher or whatever. Like, it's a great feeling to be pitching in the games that matter. But I will say, like, deep down, I'm never going to call a pitcher like a bracket pitcher or Saturday. But let's just be real. We'll call a spade. Like, I do have that to where I do have Saturday pitchers where there'll be guys that throw strikes. But they're not like people that will win us games. And then I'll have Sundays who are like my dogs that will just pound the zone, blow by kids. Those are the pitchers. My Sunday pitchers are typically the ones we'll all throw on Saturday for an inning to either set the tone, like if it's a make or break game for like where we're going to place in the bracket. I'll have them either throw one or two innings in the beginning of the game. Or they'll come in and close it out if it's a close game.
Yeah.
So all my Saturday pitchers, and let's say it's a two pool play game, and that we've won our first game, and the second game we're playing a challenging team, and that's going to decide if we play at 8 a.m. or at noon or where we're going to be in the seed. It's like, hey, we're going to throw my dude that's going to blow it by them and just set the tone early. I'm going to start them.
Right.
They're going to go 20 pitches, so they're available, on Sunday. Again, just to get us into a better seating or get us a better setup.
Yeah. And sometimes I like to throw that guy early and then throw in a slower arm in the middle and then finish up again with a harder throwing.
It's kind of like fire and ice, you throw your fire and then you throw your soft guy, there's definitely a rotation, to be built with that. Let's just dive into the pitching rotation. I think it's so much fun thinking about, like, I view pitching as like a poker game. I refer to like all the pitching, like the pitch types, as like our poker cards, but also our pitching rotations kind of like that too. So like, for instance, I have this righty who he throws hard fastballs and he has a cutter. Like, his changeup's okay, but he throws hard fastballs.
Yeah.
I love starting him as a starter. He'll go two or three innings. batters again frustrated. They'll start trying to speed it up. They'll start, you know, catching up to those fastballs, and I'll come in and I have, you know, I have the shorter righty guy that throws probably 10 miles an hour slower.
Yeah.
And I'll throw nothing but junk, you know, like changeups or whatever, or even just his fastball for an inning. And that's just, it's just fun using the pitching rotation as like, again, like a poker set where it's like, hey, I'm going to throw my king and then I'm going to throw my jack, you know, I'm going to throw those different, you know, I'll set up like that where they'll work off each other.
My oldest son was the junk pitcher. He could throw everything. He wasn't the hardest thrower, but he could locate his fastball.
That's it, man.
He had a killer curveball.
That's awesome.
Still does. And he could throw his changeup for strikes. So having three pitches, and if he needed to, he could mix in a slider every now and then. But
yeah, it's fun viewing like the pitching rotation in that aspect. And it's funny that sometimes like your best pitchers or people that you can rely on, they don't have to be flamethrowers. You know, if they throw strikes, especially at the younger age or even all the way up, like high school guys, if they could throw strikes, they're going to be on the mound a lot. So, I mean, getting to that point where you just trust pitchers in your rotation is great.
Now, I will say for me, if I've got a softer throwing arm up there, I want them to keep that ball down in the zone.
Sure. Yeah. yes.
You don't want to leave that up in the zone. So, you know, I'll be telling them to keep it down in the zone. Or if they can learn a sinker and try and learn that pronation, then, that helps with inducing ground balls rather than fly balls.
Yeah.
But
I think that's also working down the zone with the soft thrower or even just anyone in general, you know, getting with your catcher on that too. So you don't have to constantly just like yell at the pitcher, hey, keep it down or we're going to work down. Just continually reminding your catcher, set your target low, you know, give a low target, get down. I love my catcher transitioning to a one knee stance because I feel like they can get that lower target and they could receive that lower pitch a lot better, especially with no runners on. So demanding that ball down is just a great, that's how I love running pitchers and catchers.
We were on a team a few years ago and the coaches only threw the kids that could throw hard.
Oh,
and
man.
Eventually, the other teams would catch up to them.
Yeah.
So like we always would start out our games pretty well.
Yeah.
And then eventually the other team would start hitting and then it would all unravel.
Yeah. If you just have
but
far
it drove me crazy. Like they only called fastballs. They didn't call any changeups hardly at all.
Jeez.
And they only threw their hard throwing kids. And so that was a bad strategy.
I feel like you're going to see that a lot at the youth ages, that there's a lot of coaches that value hard-throwing arms, which, I mean, don't get me wrong. Everybody loves a pitcher that can throw a hard fastball.
Yep.
Everyone's going to love that. But there's going to be a point that turns into almost like a pitching machine where you're going to get the timing. It's the same speed over and over and over. You get that timing down, and then bam! Now the game's blown open because now they're sitting on your fastball.
Yeah,
you have no secondary pitch. I like talking to my pitchers about like, yes, we want to throw fastballs for strikes, but we also want to effectively change speeds. You know, effectively change it. So throw the changeup. You know, effectively get that change of speeds to where the bat the batter now has to either guess or they have to time you up perfectly on those pitches.
Yep.
So, I mean,
so let's talk about, let's say you're on a bracket game on Sunday.
Sure.
And you've got one of your better starters up there.
Mm-hmm.
And you notice, I don't know, he walks a guy or he gets hit hard or any combination of things, or maybe there's an error in the field.
Yeah.
How do you know when the time is right to pull a guy versus try and ride with him a little longer? Man. And how do you determine that?
I feel like that's something that I constantly struggle with. I constantly struggle. And I mean, let's just be real. Like no one's a perfect coach. It's going to be, I mean, you look at MLB coaches, sometimes they get fired over leaving pitchers in too long.
Yeah.
They get ridiculed on their decision-making. And I think, you know, me as a coach, that's definitely the hardest thing for me to learn. And I'm continually learning the perfect timing. And I don't think any coach is going to have the perfect timing on that. But how I view it is they're youth athletes. if it's a game, if it's early in the game, I may let them have a longer leash, meaning like I'll let them try to work through it.
Yeah.
But if we're late, we're pushing up towards like the time restraint on games, or it's a really close game and we have to win it, then yeah, I'm going to pull them.
Yeah. Now at 13, are y'all getting through 6-7 innings or?
I mean, not really. Maybe four or five yeah, innings. If the game is moving fast. But tournaments is all time limits, so I mean, an hour 20, you know, hour 15, right, hour 20, right, you're getting right through maybe four or five innings at best. Unless, yeah, again, it's just three up, three down, three up, three down, three up, three down.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, we are doing good if we get to four innings.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I like going back to like when to pull pitchers. Like I don't like stressing over an error or a long ball. Someone hits a triple. I'm not going to obsess over it, especially early in the game, because like at the end of the day, it's one hit. Games could definitely change based on one hit. So, I mean, let's just say there's an error, runner gets on first. I'm not going to stress because the next pitch could be a double play and we're
right,
out of it.
Right.
So, unless the wheels start falling off and it's just like merry-go-round where it's like five walks in a row, then probably we'll have a mound visit and either see where their headspace is or pull them.
So when you go out to the mound, what's that conversation? Depending, I know every situation is yeah, a little bit different, but
yeah.
Do you usually come armed with a joke of some sort?
That is my thought. That is exactly who I am. Especially being a catcher, like, every mound visit, like when I was catching or, you know, as a coach, definitely you read the room. But I like to at least, and you know, have the pitcher smile, you know, like, yeah, I think yeah, that's where a lot of the tension breaks for, especially for young pitchers, is if they could smile there, that's how they just suddenly let loose. They're able to breathe. The tension now breaks. So if you could yeah, say even just a stupid dad joke, you know,
yeah,
something weird, or talk about their girlfriend or, you know, whatever it is, then they're going to get their mind off the game and they're going to be able to refocus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. It is reading the room. So you definitely want to lead by example and not just be all about jokes, but I do think there's a time and place for a joke.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh man. So, I can go back to college. You know, when I was catching, I mean, we talk about like, we'd mention girlfriends or their lack of girlfriends, or we'll point out a girl in the stands, you know, whatever it is, whatever gets the pitcher's mind off that next pitch, yeah, or that next at bat, yeah, whatever it is.
So then you just break the cycle,
just yeah, break it and just be like, hey, you know, like, what are you doing after? What are you having for dinner? You yeah, know, like that's a good youth conversation starter right there.
Right.
What are you having after this? Are you having chicken tenders? You yeah, know, and then it's like, wait, tendies, what? What are you talking about? Yeah.
Do you like barbecue sauce or honey mustard?
Yes. Yes. Something to get their minds off the tension.
Yeah.
That's how, yeah, I mean, yeah. What about you? Are you a jokester?
I try, and maybe, well, let me put it this way. I'm one season into coaching pitchers. I've coached a lot of coach pitch, up to now.
Yeah.
And so I am still learning myself as yeah, well. Right. I think I overdid trying to take like a Mr. Miyagi approach of like, the Mike Maddox hand on the shoulder, like take a deep breath,
yeah, you know,
remind them to believe in themselves, their teammates trust them, you yeah, know, win the next pitch. I need to develop a bigger repertoire, I think.
Yeah,
of,
sure.
And stuff to do. And yeah, I try and keep it light too.
Yeah, and that goes back to just being a student of the game. You know, like no one's going to be a perfect coach. No one's going to be, you know, have all the answers. But at the end right, of the day, like we're there to move them in the right direction. So if it's trying to get them to bust a smile, then great.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's you to mound visit and just like get onto your infield for your infielders for booting a ball, like then it's just, it is, you know, right, I'm going to go out there and yell at my infield, you know, get them into check.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. That's usually how the mound visits go.
Cool. when you're looking at runners on first and third, what plays do you run for that?
Yeah, so I used to get into like the hand signs, and we do have hand signs for first and third. So on the defensive side of things, so first and third, we do have like signs where the catcher will come out in front of home plate and they'll give, you know, mask, chest, glove, whatever the signs are. And it's going to be either throwing through to second, having middle infield cut it, or throwing straight to third, or a pump fake, or, you know, however their teams run it. I've now started working it to the point where our catchers will read the play. So, for instance, like, we'll still have signs, you know, if we know for sure, like, we want to throw straight to third. But most of the time, like, especially in pool games, I'll have the catchers, if that runner takes off for second base, our catcher will catch the ball, and right before they'll throw the runner out of second, they'll peek to third to see what the third, what the runner on third is happening.
Do they have an exaggerated second lead or something?
Yeah,
like
if they're exaggerated, if they're out in no man's land, they're just going to go fire straight to third. But for a split second, it's not going to deter them from any throwdown or pop time. So they'll be able to peek real quick and then shoot them at second base. I like early in the game, I like trading outs for runs. So if I can get an out, I'll let that guy on third score.
Oh, interesting.
It's no big deal because I just want to get the game moving, get us out of it, slow any momentum.
Yeah. Now, at my age level, we aren't quite getting outs at second yet.
Sure.
So our first and third play.
How do you handle it?
Yeah, we have, again, I'm at the 10U level. So we have, I would say, we've got two options. For first and third, our first option is a cutoff by the infield and a throw back home.
Yeah.
We haven't perfected that one yet, though.
No, it's a great play. Like, as you know, every team has that first and third play. Like, it's a great, valuable tool to have the middle infield cut it.
The second one is a sharp throw back to the pitcher who wheels around and throws to third.
Yep.
That's another one that we've got. I hadn't thought about just the straight throw down to third yet. I'm incorporating that with our boys. But, I mean, that would be a good one, too.
Yeah, straight to third, or even have the catcher pump fake, you know, pump fake to second. Yeah. Actually fake a throw so the runner on third sees the fake, you know, the arm move.
Now, on that, do you teach keep the ball in the glove, or do you have them pull the ball out?
Man, I think probably get it in their hand just so they have that fake throw and then they can snap to third base so they don't have to go back into the glove.
Yeah.
But I know, like, baby hand, sometimes the ball could slip, you know?
Right,
so,
right.
I think it's just up to the catcher at that point.
I also think, I don't know, there's something to me that's more convincing about keeping the ball in the glove and having a big, huge, full
arm
motion
smack,
arm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To try and sell that third base runner on that throw.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. One question that I wanted to talk with you about was just a little bit of situational baseball.
Sure.
So we could talk through a few different situations if you want, but sometimes it is not always obvious where a relay throw should go if a ball is hit to the outfield. I always teach my boys stay two bases ahead of the lead runner.
Yeah.
So, you know, if there's no runners on, we're trying to get that ball into second. Yeah. Or if there's a runner on first, we're trying to get the ball to third.
Yep.
Or there's a runner on second, trying to get that ball home.
Yeah.
Now, specifically with, like, runner on second, sometimes I feel like it's worthwhile to cut that throw off and keep the runner from the batter runner from getting all the way to second and hold that runner at first and just let the run score.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I do definitely think it depends on who your outfielder is. But yeah, you hit the nail on the head is, you know, staying two bases ahead when it gets hit to the outfield. And then if it goes to the fence, then it's three bases ahead. I at least try to get my catcher on board with that to make sure that they're yelling out the bases. But yeah, I think it definitely depends on where their arm strength is. If they can actually make the play, how much you trust your relay. Because I mean, baseball fields are big, you know, every age. I know, like, if you're older, you could definitely play on a smaller field, but if you're playing on the actual regulation size for that age, the field's going to be pretty big.
Yeah.
So arm strength will definitely be a challenge at those younger ages. I do like your thought of keeping the runner on first, letting him stay put, because if you do trade letting that score run, but keeping that runner on first, it sets you up for a double play the next pitch,
right,
or the next at bat. So I like that. Unless it's just a dire, you know that that runner, that outfielder has a chance of nailing that runner. I think that's very safe to say.
Yeah.
I like doing, in practice, we go through, sometimes we'll incorporate base runners with, like, outfielders. So I'll set up, like, a middle infield. So, like, a left fielder, shortstop, third base, a second base, and then everyone else run. And then all of my catchers, like, literally read the play and yell if the play's at home or if the play's at second base. See what their timing is. I'll tell my runners, yeah, hey, if you don't score, you get 10 push-ups. Or, you know, whatever it is. So they're running hard. And then, so therefore, the outfielders know where the play is. And also, the catchers can now see when the cut, like, when that dead time is, if that makes sense. When, like, where's that line when the base runners pass that line? When, like, when should we go to second base?
Yeah.
Or if that runner's behind, you know, before that line, have the play
be. Yeah, that's a good call.
So
that's a good
call. I think it definitely goes with just understanding, having your catchers know who your outfielders are, who has a strong arm, who can make that throw.
Right.
If you have a strong, you know, infielder that has a quick relay throw, you know, like,
right.
There's so many dependent variables, but
yeah,
I do like the thought of just letting that score run, especially early in the game, and then keep the double play in order.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so with that, one thing that, like I said, we're not quite at the point where we're throwing a lot of runners out at second. Now at third, we can do that. But getting that runner out who's stealing from first to second is, a challenge for us. Mm-hmm. We're close. We're getting close. But
yeah,
what are some strategies for holding runners? What are some things that the pitchers can do, the catchers can do, the fielders can do to try and, limit the run game without getting so overly distracted by the base runners that now we've slowed the game down.
Yeah.
Too much.
Yeah. I do think, like, we as defenders, our goal is to limit the run game. Especially every position, but predominantly, like, our pitchers and catchers, we need to make sure that those base runners stay put, that they don't steal bases. So, if we can keep them on first, it increases our chances of double play balls. It increases our chance of getting out of innings or getting two outs and suddenly being at two outs in the inning.
Right.
So we get the momentum back. But how I like, you know, telling our pitchers is we should have three different kinds of pickoff moves. We should have our A move, which is like fast feet, fast hands. We're trying to get the out. We'll have a combination. So we'll have like slow feet and fast hands. So like a slower feet, but we're going to throw the ball hard. Or we're going to be super fast with our feet and kind of just give a firm throw to first. So we'll have three different types of picks just so it's not the same pickoff over and over. I like teaching my catchers.
Yeah, because I've only taught my boys to have an A and a B.
Yeah, there you go, A, B.
Adding a C would be good.
Yeah, A, B, C. So just literally the flip-flop. So A move, fast hands, fast feet. So you're going for the out. Then a B move, it'll be slow feet, fast hands. And then C move, you know, fast, the opposite, whatever. Slow hands, fast feet.
Yeah.
So different variations. I mean, you can call it however you want to call it. But like three different moves just so it doesn't get stagnant. Two moves is great, especially at the youth age. Like just have two moves. You know, you should have a get 'em move and then a move that's just going to say, hey, I know you're there.
Now, do you teach like at least for the throw over to first, like a jump pick or – where both feet are kind of moving at the same time and you're, or
I like using all sorts. I like using all sorts. So like a righty, they can do a jump move or a step behind move. So it goes back to like that A, B, C. If you feel fast on that hop throw, then hop and go. But if you have a fast feet, slow arm, you may do a hop move or you may have a quick step back move. But you'll have the A, B, C move.
Okay.
Yeah, lefties, you just have, straight pick. You'll have a read where you get to your high leg kick and you'll read what the runner does. If they lean, you pick. If they are steady, then you go home. And then you have a slide step, to home plate.
Yeah.
So different variations or a step back for a pickoff. Catchers, I love just harping into my catchers of just be alive with your arm. So snap the throw down to first base. back pick as many times as you want. I don't care. Throw, just so you show that you're not afraid to throw.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
So you give your catchers the green light to back pick.
Absolutely.
They want.
Absolutely. Okay. Third base, sketchy back picks.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of back picks to third base, but I mean, I know there's a time and place for it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, back picks the bases. I love it. That was my favorite thing about catching was back picks. So, I mean, if you just trust your arm, it's just going to allow you to fall in love with your skill set and trust, you know, your throws when you have make or break plays too.
Yeah.
So every opportunity to practice, I mean, back picks are practice too. So yeah, get better at those throws.
Okay. Let's switch over to offense now.
Yeah.
And let's talk base running. So, when is it a good idea to steal? When is it not a good idea to steal?
Yeah. So for stealing, especially at the youth age, man, I feel like there's every once in a while, you'll have a great catcher on the opposing team. So you definitely have to be a lot more strategic, but there's a lot, especially at 13, this is the year that we've switched to a bigger field.
Right.
So it's our first year on a bigger field. I'm just going to tell everyone, whoever's listening, like, we steal first pitch.
Yeah.
So if we get a run on first base, we steal. Yeah. Even if we have a dude beyond the plate, like I'm going to steal the majority of my kids. I may not steal my slow guys, but I'm just going to steal.
Now, are you calling that steal? Or are you saying, all right, boys, you have the green light and you go when you want? Or?
I'll call. I could probably count. There's three guys on my team that I've given them green lights no matter what. They have green lights every single game, every single time they get on base. They have the green light. I trust them. For the rest of the team, I call it.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't want my slowest guy having the green light and getting a bad jump. And now it's like, what is the coach doing? You know, like, right, whatever. Right. It's just, hey, yeah, I'll have my green light guys. And I'm sure you're the same way. You have a couple green light guys, and you have some guys where it's like, no, you're watching me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah,
we got picked off way too much last season. Mm-hmm. It drove me crazy. And it made me wonder if I was teaching it wrong or what. But, For a lead, I always say, you know, right, left, shuffle.
Yeah.
Like it, and your size should determine the length of that. But, you know, we want to get about, 10 to 15 feet off of first base.
Yeah.
And I we've got to work with our boys this season.
Yeah.
On just really watching
and getting those measurements, like, it definitely comes into a practice. So base running section of practice, where I'll put a pitcher on the mound, and we'll work through three different lines, and we'll just say, hey, get your left, right, shuffle, get your distance, and then see if you need to add another shuffle or how big of shuffles, you know, whatever it is, get where your measurement should be. And stick to it.
Yeah.
I like teaching my guys, like, get their, you know, 1-2 shuffle. And then once the, you know, pitcher looks over once, we'll get almost like a half shuffle. We'll get off a little bit more. Cause I mean, at the younger ages, they are probably just going one look and go home, or they'll pick immediately. So once they give you that look, you'll get an additional half a shuffle and you'll get off just a tad more. Yeah. Well, I was coaching older guys. I mean, you definitely have to be a lot more strategic in your steals. I like stealing in high percentage of breaking ball, you know, counts. So something that the pitcher's ahead in the count, you're going to see breakers or changeups down. So we'll steal on that. Hitters counts, we'll steal.
You steal third a lot too?
Yeah, we'll steal third.
I mean, we're pretty aggressive on the bases too. Like, we're very similar in terms of pretty much stealing on the first pitch.
Yeah.
We don't get thrown out yet. I think, last season we didn't get thrown out at all. We got picked off a lot.
That's unfortunate.
We didn't get thrown out a lot either at second or at third.
Yeah. Especially with no outs, man. Like, I just, I love sending my runners all day.
Well, and that's one thing I tell my pitchers too, is like, listen, a walk is a triple at this age.
Yeah.
A walk is a triple. So let's try and throw, just pound the zone, you know, throw strikes.
Yep.
Because walks,
once they get on, they're going to steal second base, they're going to steal third, because our catcher's arm strengths aren't quite there yet. They're still young.
And with less than two outs, that runner on third is going to score 95% of the time.
That's unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, and that's one way to just completely control the run game is, you know, going from the pitcher mindset, like we can't allow walks, but as base runners, we know that most of the catchers, most of the opposing catchers, don't have the arm strength. So we're still in first pitch less than, you know, less if we have no outs. One out, I'm probably going to send my faster guys. Two outs, I mean, we rarely steal two outs, unless, you know, I have my upper half of base runners, just because I don't want to end. I hate ending an inning on a base running, you know, steal or anything like that. Back picks, if you get, you know, picked off or if you get caught stealing and it ends inning, gosh, that's the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah.
So
now, we've got a couple of guys on our team who are super fast, and when they're at third, I love taking chances.
Yes.
Third.
Now, like stealing home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now at times it bites you in the butt, but, but I don't know. I love being aggressive when we're at third. And if we can somehow induce a throw behind the runner with our, and I'm talking like we have probably one guy on our team that is fast enough that I would do this with, but
yeah.
Throw behind the runner, like you're taking off, and you're trying to score.
Yep. Yep.
First and third play, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I like taking chances as well, especially with no outs. If we have a runner on third, I don't think USSSA has any like guidelines as far as how far the backstop is from the catcher. It obviously depends on like the complex, but like. I definitely, just the catcher in me, I go test the backstops before every game.
Oh,
I throw a ball, I bounce it to the backstop, and then I'll throw the ball into the backstop, and I'll see where the ball goes. That's just the catcher in me. I want to know what the backstop's
that's
doing.
Smart. Yeah.
So, yeah, as funny as it looks, and many of the young parents don't understand what I'm doing for, but, like, beginning of the game, like, I'll go out there and I'll just throw five baseballs in the backstop. I'll throw it at an angle. So if one shoots off the catcher to the side, like, I know exactly where the ball's going. But yeah, USSSA doesn't have any like rules as far as how far the backstop needs to be. So definitely paying attention to where your backstop is, and how springy the backstop net is. Because there's some backstops that you just don't steal home plate.
Right.
You know, there's some backstops where you're just like, I'm not touching it.
It's too shallow.
Too shallow.
Or it's concrete.
Or it's concrete. Yeah. Or it's so shallow. The backstop's so shallow and it's just brick. And then you know that the ball is going to shoot back to the pitcher. So it's like, you're not going to steal on that one.
Yeah.
But if it bounces to the side, then you know you're going all day because then it's rolling down to first base or third base.
Now, what do you teach your boys as far as when they get a hit, when to take an extra base? Like, when should they be aggressive and try and squeeze one more base? For me personally, I'm telling my boys going into this season, any time that you feel like you can get there,
absolutely.
Just freaking go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with that. And that comes with the player understanding their limitations.
Yeah.
Getting into their brains and like a lot of it happens in practice too. Just understanding when, like what bases can you get to on a base hit? So if you smoke it in the right center, you need to know, can you make it to second base or not on like based on where the ball flies.
Right.
So the ball dies. Can you get to second base? If the ball rolls the fence, can you get to second base? I like telling my batters, you're thinking two out of the box the entire time. You're thinking two and then slamming on the brakes and coming back to first, or not slamming on the brakes and sliding into second base.
Yeah.
I'm never going to get onto a player for being overly aggressive. Like if they smoke a shot to the outfield and they're thinking two out of the box and they get hosed at second base. I mean, if it's a dumb situation, it's a learning moment.
Right.
You know, I'm never going to get mad at them, but I will. It's definitely going to be a learning, you know, teachable moment.
Yeah.
But if there's being dumb, you know, obviously there's that line, but
right.
If you're just selling out and you're saying, hey, I'm getting two, like, yeah, I'm going to applaud you for being aggressive.
Yeah, heck yeah. Force the defense to make a play.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Even at the higher levels, man, if you force that defense to make a play, like more times than not, they're probably going to botch the ball or that throw has to be perfect to make the play.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I know last season I sent a kid on a second base hit to the outfield. I waved him home. And it was just one of those things where it's like, it had to be a perfect throw. And I can still think of the play. We all have those one yeah. plays as a coach when you're like, oh, I'm sending this guy because that throw has to be perfect. I can think of it, and the outfielder made a perfect throw, nailed the guy. It is what it is. You're going to have those moments.
Yeah.
You have those moments. But I like just thinking.
If it skips it all or, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Or if the ball's offline by 2 feet, you don't know. It changes the entire play. Yeah. So being super aggressive, and I like being aggressive as a third base coach. I want all my players to be aggressive too.
Same.
Yeah. So.
All right.
Yeah, go for it.
Let's talk bunting.
Yeah.
I feel like small ball has definitely lost its allure at the higher levels, whether that's college or professional, mostly professional. I do think small ball still exists in college, depending on the program.
Yeah.
But certainly at the youth levels, small ball can be really helpful. And I think learning to bunt and bunt really well.
Yeah.
Can help win games. Now, I will say my number one job as a coach, again, if I haven't said this before, I'll say it again, is to develop kids for high school. And and you're not going to make your high school team being a good bunter. You need to hit the ball.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, it needs to be in your repertoire.
Yeah, you have to have that in your pocket.
Yeah. So what are some situations in which you would want to bunt? What are some situations when you would say, maybe I shouldn't?
Yeah. I mean, I think it comes down to trust, understanding who your players are. I think bunting is definitely that lost trait that a lot of families or players don't care about. So when you get a player that just hops on, you know, is a new player on your team, they probably have no sense of what bunting even is. I feel like everyone just now wants to hit the ball as hard as they can, chase exit velocities, or just be like the big power hitter. But not everybody's going to be a power hitter. So when it comes to like bunting situations, I have probably three guys that I could trust to lay down a bunt, especially a sacrifice bunt. I'm trying to incorporate bunting into every one of our indoor practices. We'll set up the machine. Mm-hmm. We'll have a bunting competition, whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or we'll set up a machine. And that's your entire first round of your batting practice. It's just bunting, sack bunt, push bunts, drag bunts, all, you know, those three things, suicide squeezes, like make sure we get it down. But really try this season, I'm really making a big push on sharpening those skills, being able to bunt. But as far as situations, man, I think it depends on who the hitter is. Last season, again, I only had two or three that I could actually trust to bunt. This season, we're going to be bunting a lot more, and I'm just going to dive in with that.
Yeah.
And either you get it done or you don't. Situations of bunt, I think less than two outs, runner on first, instead of calling a hit and run, we may bunt him over. It just gives the flexibility to force the defense to make a play. Because I think a lot of teams don't work bunt strategies or bunt, you know, like situations a lot. So most of the time you're going to catch them sleeping. So I like throwing in a bunt from time to time.
Now, what are your bunt coverages look like? When you are calling out a bunt coverage play, how many different ones do you have, and what do they look like?
Yeah, my defense, I like reminding guys what their role is. Like, we're not like I don't have any like colors like, hey, we got whatever gold D or blue or whatever it is, you know, like sometimes you have the rotations. We go through like, if there's no runners on, who's where? If there's a runner on first, who's going where? If there's a runner on second base, or if there's a runner, you know, first and second, where are we going?
Yeah.
And then I'll remind, because bunt defenses are very similar. However, sometimes the third baseman, you know, there's a difference of who covers first baseline and third baseline.
Right.
Make sure those coverages are happening.
Yeah, we have two plays, and we call it cover one or cover three. And it really just depends on – it really pertains to the pitcher. So, if we're in cover one, that means there's no runners on, and the pitcher is covering one, first baseman.
Sweet.
First baseline, and the third baseman's crashing.
Yeah.
And you know, first baseman stays home, second base covers second base, and shortstop covers third.
Yeah.
And then cover three is the pitcher goes to the third baseline.
Third baseline.
And first baseman's crashing.
Third base stay home. Yeah.
Third base stays
home. I think I don't think there's anything, you know, wrong with naming the defenses. I think that's great, especially just like assigning it, like, hey, cover three, this is what you're doing, cover one, this is what's happening. I think as the play evolves and as they get higher up, the game evolves too. And like a lot of it is just like the understanding of the game. So as long as, yeah, the younger kids, that's great that you have the play calls for that. 13 is that weird age that they're getting into middle school. So I want them to start reading the game and understanding where they're going with the ball and where the coverages are based on that. So I like having my players start getting to the point where they're reading the play. They understand what their assignment is, what they should be doing. If they're sleeping, we're going to have a conversation about it.
Right.
But they should have at least an idea of what's going on. Yeah. We'll remind them from the dugout though.
Yeah.
Like, hey, third base, you're taking two hard steps and covering third, or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, when you are teaching bunting, you are, we're trying to get the ball past the pitcher. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get it down the line as close to that line as possible. Is there anything else that you would want to say about that? With a runner on the right side of the infield, we're trying to go to the left side.
Yeah.
With a runner on the left side of the infield, we're trying to go to the right side.
Yeah. Or where the pitcher is, if you have a righty, he's probably going to fall off the mound to the left side. Or if it's a lefty, if you're going to be falling off to the third base side. That's perfect. That's perfect. I don't really, unless it's like a push bunt where it's like, hey, I'm going to call time and be like, hey, this pitcher's falling off to third base side like crazy. Second baseman's playing way back. We may try to push bunt it like at the second baseman, mm-hmm. getting into that no man's land.
But, right. Do you do that with your lefties? Do you teach that with your lefties? That's more of a pull bunt, but.
Yeah, more of a pull bunt or drag bunt. I have zero lefties.
Do you work on?
I have zero lefty hitters.
Oh, okay. So, you're not going to work on drag bunts with that team.
No.
Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But push bunts, drag bunts, at the end of the day, if they just get the bunt down, success, and they keep away from the pitcher. But they definitely should start developing that skill where we're working first base or third base side.
Yeah. Cool.
Even sacrifice bunts, like, do not bunt it back to the pitcher.
Oh my gosh.
Especially runner on first. You bunt it straight back to the pitcher, you leave a double play wide open.
Yep.
Especially if it's a hard bunt right back to him. So
right.
Keep the ball away from the pitcher.
Let's talk about the hit and run. How often do you use the hit and run?
Again, this season we're making a huge push to understanding like your assignments and just committing to it. A big thing that like the highlight we talked about in previous podcasts is like themes and moral, like our thing is to compete, and like we're going to compete at any way possible. So we're focused on bunting, doing hit and run successfully. Right now it's about getting the ball on the ground, and then we're going to start leveling up to put the ball on the ground at the second baseman.
Yeah. Behind the runner.
Yeah. Behind the runner where that second baseman's vacating. Cause we have all righties. So I like calling hit and run probably maybe a couple times a game. I'm not going to use it that often just because we haven't had much success with it.
Yeah.
But this season we're going to be making a big push for it.
Now you are calling that with a runner on first and less than two outs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you calling it at all with a runner on second or third, or is it mainly just to get that runner moved?
I do runners on first. The goal of the hit and run that I view it, and everyone may view it differently, our goal of the hit and run is to get that runner from first to third.
Yeah.
So typically I'll call a hit and run with no outs. I am very hesitant to call it with one out just because the likelihood of you lining a line drive to first base or shortstop and it doubling up and being out of the inning, I stress out about that.
Yeah.
So there's some times where I'm just like, I'm not going to call a hit and run with one out. But with no outs, that's when I'll typically call a hit and run. But yeah, that's pretty much the situation. And runners on first, I haven't toyed with the thought of, you know, runners on second.
The idea is to get that runner into scoring position.
Yeah. And get from first to third or even at second at the very least.
Are you using it early in the game, late in the game, anytime in the game? When you're ahead, when you're behind?
It's definitely situational. As we are working to make a big push for it, I'm probably going to, if we're like in a lead, I may call for it just to like practice. Or if we're getting blown out, I may practice it. But do or die times, we'll probably get there towards the end of the game or towards the end of the season. Or we'll start doing hit and runs like when it really matters. But yeah, probably earlier in the game, we'll probably take an approach to it. And then depending on if we're getting blown out or if we're blowing someone out, we'll call it.
So late in the game, with a runner on first. I mean, you're stealing more often than not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not as necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a valid point. You know, we're stealing the base already. So I may, I actually would probably like lay in the game. I probably would trust a bunt, a sack bunt more than a hit and run. So I may call a sack bunt, right off the back of the runner for sure to second base instead of possibly lining into a double play.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
cool.
That's where I stand. But I think every team is different. And I think it's where the coach trusts their players the most. And I trust my players all the way until they can't be trusted.
Yeah.
So, so we'll probably toy with it early in the season and then, see where we're at, but we're making a big push for those specialty things.
Now with 13U and the bigger bases and all of that, are you teaching slash bunting at all?
I am not. I've never really was taught how to slash bunt. It was never a part of my game. I never really was on a team to slash bunt. So, I mean, I've never used it. What about you?
Well, I think at 10U, it's kind of, it's frowned upon for sure.
Yes. Like, I do feel like there's a scare tactic on the slash. I mean, do you call it? What do you do?
I have not. I have not implemented it yet.
Yeah.
I think, though, with these boys, in a couple of years when we move up to a bigger field, that might change. It's a fake bunt and you pull it back and it's a kind of a half swing over and you're trying to, similar to the hit and run, get that ball on the ground over to the right side.
Yeah.
I
think in like for U-Trip, like, it is legal, but I remember when I was coaching like 15s and 16s, it was illegal. So like I just pulled it up like, high school, you're not allowed to slash bunt, but,
Really?
It's one of those things. Yeah. And I think that's why I haven't really used it just because there's like that danger side of things. Like, I don't know.
With everybody crashing.
And then you're hitting the ball. Like, I don't know.
You don't really see it in the game at the major league level either.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's just a lot of danger.
I tell you what though, I think the lack of small ball in MLB is sad. Yeah. I wish there was more. It's so focused on the home run now.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know. I think that a lot of that aspect of the game being lost is a sad thing.
Yeah. Well, I think once they did away with, once they did away with like pitchers having to hit, now that everyone's a DH, people are trying to like sell tickets, teams are trying to sell tickets.
Yeah.
So they just want the hitters to hit,
Right.
Every hitter, especially like as you like go higher and higher, like in that college to pro to whatever level you are, it's like hitters want to hit.
Yeah.
So like, they're not going to take the bat out. And I think that's probably where bunts have kind of gone off to the wayside. But I mean, let's just be real. If you can bunt for a base hit, that's going to increase your batting average.
Right.
So, and I don't think a lot of youth athletes even realize that a bunt for a base hit is written in the scorebook as if you just hit a single.
Yeah.
Like, people don't realize that you bunt, you get on base, it's a base hit.
It's the same as a hard ground ball to the left fielder.
To left field. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
It literally just says single. It doesn't say you bunted the ball. It says you have a single, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
All right. Hey man, this was a good strategy sesh today.
Yeah, absolutely.
This was good. We covered a lot of topics.
Yeah.
Are there any topics that maybe we didn't cover that you want to go back and touch on as far as whether it's managing coaching staff or pitching in defense or anything offensive?
I think we pretty much talked about a lot of it. I think, just piece of advice to, coaches out there is get to a point where you are very comfortable with your coaching staff and trust your coaches to take the reins on different avenues or different topics during practices and also during games.
Yeah.
I think sometimes head coaches can get in that mindset where they try to do too much. Yeah. They're more of that control freak instead of, using the art of delegating. And then, I mean, delegating is handing off, important things to individuals, but also just trusting that they can handle it.
Right.
So right. as much as we want to trust our players, I think we have to trust our coaches as well. And I mean, they are your staff. They're part of your yep. team. They're your commanders as well. So, I mean, give them an opportunity. And I mean, you can also coach them up on different topics too. So if they're not very good or they're not very skilled, I mean, heck, coach the heck out of them too.
Right.
Teach them what you want them to know as well.
And like, you can learn things from your assistant coaches too.
Absolutely. You
know, certainly. I learned stuff from my assistant coaches, quite a bit last season. And, you know, again, I'm like team culture, rah-rah guy. and so some of the ins and outs of the details of baseball, I am not an expert on.
Yeah.
And so I am more than willing to say, hey, you have taught bunt defenses before.
Yeah.
Teach us bunt defenses and let's go with it from there. And, or base running or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
I think empower your assistant coaches to be their best. And, you know, if there's something you disagree with, then talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody sees the game differently. I mean, it also comes to like your background as well. Like, I was a catcher in the past, so I view the game totally different than mm-hmm. what you probably view the game, Adam, or as far as my assistant coach. Like, we're going to view the games completely different. But there's also going to be a reason why we view it different. You know, like, it's just going to be, what do we focus on the most, or what do we find the most important is a little bit different than what our assistant coaches may be. Or even if you're an assistant coach, your head coach may view the game differently. So
now, I didn't play catcher, but my oldest did. And now my next one wants to play catcher as well.
Nice.
So,
it's the best position.
Yeah, it's good. You're in on every play, and you got to know exactly where that ball needs to go, no matter what is happening.
I am biased, but yeah, I think it's the best.
It is. I read Jerry Weinstein's book a few years ago, Coaching Catchers.
Yeah.
And my gosh, just in like the ideas presented on how to coach catchers, you learn so much about the entire game.
Yeah.
Because there's so much responsibility at the catcher position.
So many responsibilities. And I think like coaching catchers, like from a coaching standpoint, is so valuable because they do see the game differently. But they also, like, especially youth catchers, you have to really push them to see through those lenses, because not everyone will view the game yet. But there's so many things that go into a game.
Yeah.
So that's way above. I mean, going from pitch calling to managing the defense to being the pitcher psychologist. You
right.
know, like,
right?
So just so many things.
Yeah.
I love it.
Good deal.
I love it.
All right. There we go. Episode 4 in the books. What are we talking about next?
Next week, we are going to be working on the preseason side of things with physical training, how to get our teams up to speed, how to maintain arm strength throughout seasons. So everything that goes into the physical side.
Awesome. I would like to incorporate even into that a little bit of in-season physical training as well.
Absolutely.
Because we incorporated some of that last season. It was really good for our team. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll see you next time.
All right. See you on the next one.